Welcome back to the Tipsy Theology Podcast, and I'm your host, and my name is Paul. And that's the name I go by. And today we have a very special treat. It's probably more of a treat for me, but once you listen to it, you'll realize it was actually a treat for you all along. And that's because I believe this is our first repeat guest, Mr. Adam Continenza Esquire.
What's up, Paul?
Welcome back, man.
Thanks, buddy. A couple of guys with strong biblical names getting together around a Christian podcast. So what could be better?
Dude, I love it. You've got a propensity for fruit, and I've got a propensity for telling women to stop talking.
Okay. Let's stick with it.
You're like, we'll leave that one alone. For those that heard our last episode, we were talking about one of the commandments of the Ten Commandments. And in that, we started to ask the question, I think you brought it up first, of what about the Sabbath?
Yeah, it was kind of just one thought that snuck in our discussion about the third commandment. And I don't know where it came from. And naturally, here we are. Paul had approached me and said, dude, we have to finish talking about the Sabbath. So go and do some homework and come back on my show. Of course, I couldn't refuse.
So that's what we're going to be talking about today. We're talking about the Sabbath.
It's complicated, man. I mean, it just like when we went over the third commandment, you read it and you're like, okay, this is simple. But then you read through the Bible and it's really not simple at all. It's one of probably the most complicated aspect of the Ten Commandments as it translates into the New Testament. And I think
100%.
It's not a coincidence that it's also the longest commandment. Like God knew this is going to be a problem later. So we're going to make it extra long. It's kind of like a teaser.
You know, it's funny you say that too, because that absolutely. That's probably the thing that we're the worst at, which is just stopping.
Well,
we're like, why would we slow down? We can just keep on going.
Yeah, I guess we'll get into that a little bit about stopping the Sabbath observation.
Yes. But before we do that, what are we drinking today?
Well, I've got myself here Hofbräu Original. Now, I understand that you attempted to garner the Hofbräu Original and ended up with the Dunkel. So why don't we crack them open and compare notes?
Absolutely. I'm excited. And there was a couple options there. There was like the Hefeweizen one. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember what the other one. It was a Malbec, I think. But I picked Dunkel because it sounds hilarious.
It is a really funny name for a beer.
Drunk uncle.
I know. I know it's German, but I always say it like, Dunkel. Not Irish, but. Dunkel. And I'm sure nobody picked up that was supposed to be an Irish accent either, so I apologize.
Appreciate you clarifying. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll let you go first. What do you taste?
Well, I'm no wine connoisseur, but I'm tasting wheat, possibly malt. Maybe. I know yours is going to be a lot maltier than mine.
It is.
So last time we drank a Dutch beer, which was a bit stinky.
Yes.
This has a similar kind of stink, but it's a little less pronounced. I think it's, I don't know, maybe just the Germans do it better. I hear they have like just really good beer in Germany. Never been.
Yeah.
To the country of Germany and had authentic German beer. I heard they drink it warm. Mine is cold. It's good.
Mine was cold, but it's been sitting out for an hour, so it is now warm. So I'm in European fashion.
There you go, bud. My second one.
But you're right.
Will be warm.
Perfect. But yeah, this one definitely is very malty. It's one of those, when I sniff it, it actually smells like, have you ever done like one of those beer tours where you walk through and you see like, oh, this is where we make it. And it has that specific stench of like grain to it, like wet grain.
It's like hardcore.
That's what.
Wet grain. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. That's the smell I get from this. It has like that like little tinge of that flavor to it, but it's a very smooth, subtle beer. I could see drinking about 15 of these and feeling great.
Oh.
In German fashion.
Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you. But we're not doing that today because we practice moderation. But actually, so I went ahead and looked up some things on this beer as well, as I like to do. Mm-hmm. And it actually says it has royal roots. So the Hofbräu beer has a royal connection. It was originally brewed by the Royal Brewery of the Kingdom of Bavaria, commissioned by Duke Wilhelm V in 1589. The brewery was established to ensure a local high-quality beer for the royal court and the citizens of Munich. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Nice. That's an old beer.
Right? It's
like 500 years old.
Oh, it's pretty good.
Survived World War II and everything. Right, and World War I for that matter, and whatever other wars were in between 1500 and now. So very impressive track record.
It's pretty good. It's been, you know, I am curious though, like how, unfortunately none of the people that were alive then are alive today. But I am curious, like how similar the flavor is, if it tastes different now than it did originally.
Well, I'm surely if it's pasteurized now, it's going to have some sort of different flavor or texture.
That's fair. Yeah.
And I wonder what their quality assurance was back then. I mean, every bottle of this, I mean, it's exactly the same. Doesn't matter when I get it, where I get it. But back then, you know, what was their level of disparity? I don't know. What do you call it? The quality disparity between their different batches? Who knows, man?
Yeah. Why can't I think of that word? But yeah, there's probably quite a few differences. And even like if it settles down a little bit at the bottom of the barrel, they're like, oh, yeah, let's get down there.
Oh, yeah.
It's a little crunchy.
Yeah, get a ladle out for that one.
But that's cool. And then it's also, this is a big one for some Oktoberfest celebrations, including those at Hofbräuhaus, I think is how you pronounce it. So they host a unique event called Beer Barrel Racing. Participants compete by rolling empty beer barrels, typically used for serving beer, along a designated course. It's, according to ChatGPT, a hilarious spectacle that combines athleticism with the spirit of Oktoberfest, and it's sure to bring a smile to anyone watching.
I'm smiling just thinking about it.
Right. I wonder if that's where we get the polka song, Roll Out the Barrel.
Hmm.
I don't know.
I'm stumped on that one, bud.
You're like, I don't listen to polka happily.
No. I'm a polka fan. Trust me.
Oh, good. I feel like we've been underground for long enough. We gotta start coming out.
Well, you know, at certain Italian and Croatian festivals, I mean, you can't help but have a few polkas.
Absolutely. Well, anyway, you ready to hop into this?
Let's do it, man.
Sweet. So I did an episode about the Sabbath. I know you listened to it. So I'm gonna pass the mic over to you now on this, because I know you've been doing a lot of research and just finding some really cool things. So I'm really excited to hear about those.
Yes. I told you earlier today, I think I had a breakthrough, but I'm not going to tell it to you right away. Ooh. We'll see when it comes up. Okay, so I mean, based on these last, the last podcast we did in this one, I have a bit of an obsession with the commandments. I just think that even though the law has, it hasn't been abolished. What did Jesus say? He hasn't come to enforce the law, but to fulfill it, right? Mm-hmm. So we still have to know these laws. And these are really the first rules, hard rules, that Israel got from God. And they failed forever, as we still fail now, to even complete these 10, let alone all the other laws in the Torah. And so this one in particular is one that I had just totally ignored. I mean, completely ignored.
Yeah.
Until recently, when I was thinking, okay, Jesus is perfect under the law, cannot commit sin, cannot break God's law, and yet seemed to go against the day of rest, which is a paradox. It can't happen. So there's something else happening here, right? Something else is happening.
Yeah.
The way that it was observed maybe wasn't full or complete or perfectly understood, or it was just the way that it was for the time. Likely it's just all of these things.
Hmm.
So let's just start with the commandment, shall we? Let's just read it through real quick. Because the Sabbath, Shabbat, Yom Shabbat, like, you would expect it to have, like, meanings that come in. Like, so a lot of Hebrew words have these meanings that come in together from other places. But Shabbat is just Shabbat. It means rest or cessation, just to cease working. So this is the commandment, and I'm reading from Exodus 20, verses 8 through 11. As I said, it's the longest commandment. It's got four full verses. I think the second commandment has three verses about not making idols. But this one got an extra verse, which means it's extra important. The first commandment is the most important, I would say, because Jesus reiterated that it was one of the greatest commandments, to love the Lord your God with all your heart. And yet, so we go fourth. The fourth commandment down is the Sabbath commandment. But it's super long. So it's like, okay, yeah, it's fourth in line, but it's not less important. Okay, people. And you know that because it's extra long. I'm just going to read it real quick from the New King James Version.
Okay.
It says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Okay, already we have to pause. Some versions say, keep the Sabbath day and to make it holy. They swap those two words, keep and make. So first of all, we have to talk about what is holy. And from what I understand, now growing up, I mean, as a Christian in the modern world, holy is a super loaded word. We think of it as like...
Yes.
It's spiritual context, and it's like light is shining from behind you, and you're just like this blinding radiance. And to be holy, you have to be good and like have these deeds behind you, like backing up your holiness. And it was like this, that's what I thought. That's what I was never taught, but just kind of gleaned, right, from my upbringing as a Christian and a Catholic.
Yeah.
But from my understanding in Hebrew, to be holy, just it means to be set apart. So you're not all these things. You're different from all these things. You're not part of nature. You're holy. God is holy. God is so holy that God is separated from the entire universe. from the heavens and the earth completely. It doesn't even live in this universe. Is in heaven, yeah. Is his own place outside. That's how holy God is, and he's set apart completely. So to set the Sabbath apart, to make it totally separate. And it's interesting because the other 6 days of the week are just called the first day, the second day, the third, fourth, fifth, sixth day. Mm. Shabbat has a name. Just there in the name, it's already set apart, which is super cool. Mm. Let's get on with this. For That's 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do work, you nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor the stranger who is within your gates. So, I mean, it's getting like really into the weeds here. Like, no, nobody's going to work. Don't put your cows to work. And if you have a guest who's not an Israelite, they're not even going to work. And they're probably going to think it's weird, and they're not going to understand it, but you're going to tell them, today is the Sabbath, and it's set apart. Don't worry about it. Just trust us. So then continuing on to verse 11, it says, for in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Now, isn't this interesting? Isn't this interesting? So, for 6 days, which, you know, depending on what school you're in, if you're a biblical literalist or whatever else, like, I don't know how long 6 days was. Because for the first couple of days, there was no sun and moon. Or the first day, there was no sun and moon. And if we use the sun and moon to tell days, how long was that? I try not to bother myself with that because with salvation, I don't think I need to understand that. But for this purpose, let's imagine that it is either. It can be 6 days as we know them, or whatever time frame you want. But in those 6 days, God worked. And so up until that point in the universe, the only thing that was known was building, creation, and building, and ordering, and working. God was just working the whole time. And then the seventh day, again, it's set apart when God stopped working. So the day is holy, and that it is so much different than the rest. That's what makes it holy. It is completely set apart from the rest. There is no work. God himself, who created the heavens and the earth and made everything work, set the ball spinning, and who still works in the world, has a day when everything keeps working, even when he rested. It's incredible. How did it keep working if God rested? That's what makes it holy. It's completely different. So we are told in this commandment to make the day holy. So we are commanded to make it separate. Don't work. You rest. Now, all the specifics of what that looks like, the whole from sun before sundown on Friday to after sundown on Saturday, and walking only a certain distance, and whatever else the specifics were, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think that's in the Bible. Does the Bible say you can't walk more than such and such a distance? Because I looked it up.
That's one.
I didn't look it up as deeply as I wanted to, but I don't think it's in there.
Yeah, from what I remember, that's not in like the Levitical or laws or anything like that, which we typically, because that's ones where we see things like cutting your hair and having hair too long or whatever. But I think with those, because there were a lot of extra laws that were added on by religious leaders, mm-hmm. To kind of like break loopholes. Because you know how we are. And Jesus called them out even, you know, in his day. It's like, yeah, you say this, but you do this.
Right. So I guess that would be in like the Talmud. And I'm not saying that it's wrong to do it. It's not wrong. I think it's an amazing way to separate yourself and make the day holy. Mm. But in pointing that out, I'm going back to what we kind of started with, where I said, I'm not sure we were doing it right or all the way or really understanding what the point is. Mm. I mean, when God brought the people out of Egypt and gave them all these rules and laws and sent them among their enemies, even the creation story itself is in direct, I guess you could say it's in direct comparison to other creation stories of those cultures in the surrounding area. A lot of them started with this chaotic water that was death itself, and maybe a hero came and conquered it. I mean, you can think of the Babylonian creation story of Marduk slaying Tiamat, who was the dragon, who was the water, and like peeled her skin back and made the land. But the story of the God of Israel is the Leviathan. Are you kidding me? Hmm. The Leviathan is nothing. There was no struggle. This is the God. This is the powerful God who defeated Pharaoh, the living God King, without even breaking a sweat, through this guy with a stutter who just had a stick in his hand. Like, this is the God. So he's setting the people Israel apart as holy this whole time, every single step of the way out. And so he wants them to keep the Sabbath day holy as a way to, again, separate them from the people around them, from nature itself, because again, there are no days off. Nobody gets a day off except humans and except the Israelites at that time. We can take days off now because of you know, the way we've evolved our society. But at that time, the Israelites were the only ones taking a day off. No one else would have taken the day off. It wouldn't have made sense. It would have been impossible. It would be a death sentence to your whole family if you took the day off.
It's true.
So this is a theme we see throughout the Bible, where God forces the Israelites to trust him in a scenario that would surely be certain death, and then witness the conquering of death.
Wow. That's cool. It's interesting you bring that point. There's a lot of really cool points you brought up there. One of them, which is the last one, when you think about who these people are, because historically they were always shepherds. And so with that, it's like, if you take a day off, well, what happens to your flock? You know, what happens if they run off? It's like, not like these guys were farmers, who it's like, we can leave the crops alone for a couple hours and they'll be fine. It's like, these are living beings that these people are taking care of. That is their whole livelihood. With that, it kind of brings up an interesting question, and it's even how they would interpret it too. So it's like, your whole livelihood here, it's like, take a break from your occupation would be another way to say it. When it says in the commandment, it says, you shall not work. It's like, what you do for a living, take a break from that. But what happens if one of their sheep runs away? Are they just going to let it go? Like, I'll get it tomorrow. Or are they going to run after it? According to what Jesus says in, I have to see exactly which verses, I have it written down somewhere. He's like, wouldn't you go save it?
Yeah. And of course it's a rhetorical question. Yes, of course. Of course.
Yeah.
You get to preserve your livelihood on the Sabbath. It's not about destruction, The Sabbath is about restoring Eden, the perfect abundance. Every law that God made is to bring abundance. This is something that just blows my mind. And I never hear anyone bring this up in apologetic debates with like atheists or whatever. The laws in the Bible and that Jesus taught may seem obvious, but they mostly go against human nature.
Yeah.
Don't be greedy. I mean, like, not killing people. I mean, of course, there's all these situations where people might want to do any of these things and say that they're fine way to live. Mm-hmm. But then when you follow the law, and James brings this up, in James he says the law is perfect and when it sets you free. Now, we think of laws as things that limit your capability to do something. And yet God's law sets you free. And in Deuteronomy, he talks about when you follow my law and you follow the Torah, all of these great things are going to be given to you. And yet when you don't do it, just destruction is going to surround you.
Hmm.
And so these perfect laws, they actually bring abundance. So anything that causes destruction is not a law. It's not one of God's laws. So to let your sheep go and die would be against the law, because God doesn't want destruction. God wants creation and abundance. That's what he promised us. So following the Sabbath is meant to bring abundance through trust and fear of the Lord. And we see this in Exodus 16. And this is even before the Ten Commandments. Those don't come until Exodus 20 when they get to Mount Sinai. But in Exodus chapter 16, the Israelites are out of Egypt. They're in the desert. They are just whining with good reason. It's probably terrifying out there in the wilderness. They left their homes. They're like, it was better to be a slave and have food than to be out here in the wilderness. We don't have anything. Moses, tell God we want meat. And so Moses, okay, all right, I'll tell him, okay? So he tells God, obviously the people are displeased, and so God sends them quail and manna. Every day he sends manna from the heavens, and it's all over the ground. It's all over the place like dew. And he says, collect such and such an amount for each person every day, and that will be enough for you. And you eat it. Don't save any for tomorrow.
Hmm.
What did the people do? They tried to collect a whole bunch of it. They just scooped it up by the armloads. And what happened the next day? The manna rotted. It was disgusting. It was inedible.
Hmm.
But then on the seventh day, he says, there will be no manna. It's not that you don't get to pick it up. There will be none on the ground. So on the sixth day, collect your double portion. Well, the people went out on the seventh day and they looked for it anyway. And they're like, there is no manna. This is it. It's over. We're going to starve to death. And God's just shaking his head. After all I've done for you, you still don't believe. Because I told you, and this is a precursor to the commandment. It's like he was testing Israel to see how far they'd come in their fear of the Lord, which was not far at all, and arguably maybe even less than it was before. I mean, they didn't trust any of what he said. And it's really interesting that on 5 days, I guess it would be 5 days, the manna would rot in the morning. If there was any left over, you have to get it fresh.
Yeah.
On the seventh day, it did not rot.
Hmm.
And something's going on there.
Yeah.
It's, we could say because of the will of God, but check this out. The fact that it did not rot is an intercession by God. The nature of the manna on the 6 days was to rot. Just like mapped onto the 6 days of creation, the 6 days of creation was to work and build and get things working. Everything had to be touched and spoken to work. But on the seventh day, God didn't say anything. And so somehow in God's day of rest, it's actually an intercession into the universe where everything continues to flourish even while we rest and maybe can assume, and I don't know this for a fact, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, maybe God is still resting every seventh day. I don't know. Just a thought. And if that's true, then God has built in this universal intercession into the Sabbath day where things keep working. You can keep surviving even when you take the day off.
Yeah.
And this is the thing that I thought of today, was that resting is not inaction. It is somehow a divine intercession where God's rest is more powerful than his work. And the only reason I say that is because the Bible is so full of paradoxes where what we think should be obvious, it never works out.
Yeah.
And I can point, I'm going to point to a specific verse here where this kind of maps on of this paradoxical situation. So in Matthew 11, Jesus says, "Take up my yoke and you'll receive my rest." Opposite, right there. You take up a yoke, it means that you're about to pull something. You're going to work. You're going to carry something.
Yeah.
So he says, do this work, and it's not work. Okay? So he hits us with his paradoxes, where you trust in fear of the Lord is more beneficial than all of the other stuff. All the hard work you do, it's like, you can work as hard as you want, but did you trust God on the Sabbath? Did you trust God when you didn't have to do it? You didn't do anything and you didn't have to do anything. Because God pushed his hand into the world and on a day of rest, everything keeps going.
Yeah.
And it continues and in Matthew 11, and this again reminds me of when James says that the law will set you free. That's a paradox. And God just keeps turning our beliefs and expectations upside down. So instead of trying to follow this law, when Christ came, the law was a measuring stick for the wages of your soul, which was death, 100% across the board, except, I guess, for Enoch and Elijah. And maybe Moses. No one knows what happened to Moses. They say he died, but no one saw it. But there's at least two guys who never died.
Yeah.
And did they follow that the impossible law? That would set them free? They take up
that's
this
a study
yoke.
Right then and there.
Yeah, that's it's deep stuff, dude, because they took... Elijah took up the yoke so hard that he asked God to kill him. I can't do this another day. I just slaughtered 450 prophets of Baal and Ashtaroth. Can you just kill me now? God says, no.
Yeah,
but trust me, bud. We're almost done. I promise we're almost done. Go to the desert and you're not going to have any food for 40 days. Gonna walk around in circles. And Elijah gets to the mountain of Horeb, ostensibly to the same place where Moses went when God revealed himself, his back to Moses, which is debatable. but the story maps on.
Yeah.
And God shows Elijah the rest. It's how he gets him through. Hmm. I mean, Elijah is standing on a cliff, on a mountain.
Yeah.
Telling God, please kill me. Maybe he was going to jump. I don't know. But what God showed Elijah was a tornado, a firestorm, an earthquake. But the Bible says God was not in those things. These heavy-handed works, what we would call the hand of God, it said God was not in them.
Yeah.
There's another paradox. What are you talking about? God was not in them. These are the things that we consider acts of God, literally.
Yeah.
And the last thing that came by Elijah was a calm and gentle voice. It was rest. God showed Elijah the ultimate rest. This is what I am. The rest. Passed him right by. And wow. Elijah had the fuel to keep going for another, whatever it was, few weeks, few months, whatever it was.
It's so cool.
So God, he shows this, a man who didn't die, who was taken to heaven for taking up the yoke of the law in such an extreme manner, and showed him what Jesus was going to do for the rest of us before actually doing it for him. The calm, gentle voice is what we see in the Sabbath. It was a vision of rest.
Yeah.
Because the first things he saw were the violence of his prophecy and the hardship of the world. And I mean, can you imagine how crazy that would be to be in his state of mind and then for God to just be like, hey, look at this. Boom, 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 explosions, like destruction everywhere. He's like, oh, what is this? And then the seventh day theme comes through. That was me, Elijah. It's just so powerful.
Wow.
To see that.
Yeah.
The end state is rest. So when Christ came as our intercessor and claimed himself to be the Lord of the Sabbath, what I was just telling you, this intercession of the Sabbath, where the rest is not in action, it's intercession. Christ came as the rest and interceded on behalf of all humanity, past, present, and future, destroyed and conquered death, and then sent the Holy Spirit literally into our bodies, if we'll let it. And so it's like this promise of Eden and like this return of Eden is in the rest. And so we have this temple now built into us that Jesus gave to us as the gift. This is the gift of the final rest, is that we can dwell in an Eden space, in this torn up world, and that does not solve why we don't operate the way that the Jews did for the Sabbath at all. So that's where I'm at now. Why did we stop observing the Sabbath? I know that it has a lot to do with what Paul said about, like, you know, you don't have to be circumcised. Don't drive out those who aren't circumcised. You don't have to eat kosher anymore. Right. Like these things were the law. This was the law. This was not salvation. And the practices of observing the Sabbath, observing Yom Shabbat, didn't translate to other cultures. So in bringing in the Gentiles and opening the kingdom of heaven for all mankind, other cultures were not set up to observe the Sabbath like the Jews. I mean, the Jews were, they set up their entire society to be able to observe Sabbath. So, I mean, it's a reason and it's an excuse to why we don't have to. But the commandment still exists. So the big question is, how are we keeping the Lord's Day holy? And what for us now is the Lord's Day? What do you think, dude?
Thanks for the easy question. Yeah, you know, so as you're talking about this, it really makes me think, and where my mind is right now. So I will start by saying I don't have an answer, but as we're walking through this, where my mind goes is, yes, you have the Jewish people with thousands of years of history and practice and just tradition that's so built into their culture and their lifestyle. And then the Lord says, Jesus says, hey, it's not only for you with all this stuff, but it's also for these other people with their own stuff. And we're going to graft them into this. And Paul takes up that mantle as well as a lot of the other disciples and says, yeah, let's bring them in. And then you have the Jewish people like, we're supposed to not like these people. And also, they eat pork. So, like, what are we supposed to do with that? And he's like, Paul's like, so what? If you think that's a sin, then yeah, don't do it. They don't think it is, and it's not. So, and especially Paul talks about the Sabbath, and he says one person views one day as sacred, the other one does not. Neither one of them is really wrong in that. I'm paraphrasing his words very badly there. But in that, it's like, I think that's kind of what happened, where I guess it'd be like, if you're used to going to church every single Sunday, and someone who's never gone a day in their life, it's a lot easier for them to not go than it is for them to go. And so with the Sabbath and a lot of its traditions and practices, I wonder, and this is where my speculation is, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this, that there was so much going on that it was a little bit overwhelming. And then there's Paul coming in and says, like, hey, you don't have to do all of it. You know, follow the commandments. It's more about your heart than it is your actual actions. That people go, okay, cool, so I'm not going to do it.
Yes. I think that's probably true. And of course, this is one of the most difficult things about being a Christian. You can't just take a verse out of the Bible and live by it.
Right.
You have to take the whole Bible cover to cover. You read it a bunch of times. You have to read books by people who are way smarter than you. You have to go to church to learn things that you didn't know. You have to listen to podcasts about topics that you're interested in and find people who have read more about these tiny little pieces that then they can tell you about it. There's so much connected back and forth that it's like, yes, Paul said you don't have to honor the Sabbath this way.
Yeah.
You don't have to honor it this way. But check this out. Let me pull up some notes here.
And actually, while you're doing that, you did remind me, and I apologize if this is where you're going. It reminds me of the switch to the Lord's Day. And so you have Shabbat, and then you have post-Jesus' resurrection, this switch to, oh, let's observe Sunday instead of Saturday. Saturday is the traditional, you know, day of rest. There seemed to have been like a switch to let's celebrate and recognize the life and death and resurrection of Jesus, as opposed to this one day representing rest, because Jesus is bringing the ultimate rest.
Yeah. It's interesting to see what people have done with this tradition. As we read in the Bible, in Paul's letters and in Hebrews, people were still observing Shabbat and celebrating the resurrection. They would have, what do they call it? Love feasts?
Yeah.
Is that what Paul calls it?
It sounds right.
So, something like that. It sounds very strange. But it's when you have your friends and family and the church over and you guys eat together.
Yeah.
And there are people today, and I think we've talked about this before. There's a revival in the Christian church of people in our generation who fell away from the church. I know a lot of it had to do with scandals in the Catholic Church. Either real or perceived hypocrisy among other churches, which of course many, if not all churches have. It's
absolutely.
Generally unavoidable to sin. And to see people sinning and preaching, I don't know why it turned so many people off. I mean, just so many people walked away. And then, especially during the COVID era, people started to be like, hold on, dude, something bigger is going on here. None of this makes sense. It's like, I feel like there's some kind of like evil force in the world. And then, dude, people started coming back. They started coming back, man. They're reviving. These born-again Christians who left the church, witnessed evil in the world, and instead of being like, it's like how evolution is, you know, survival of the fittest. Like, no, something's not right here. And then there's that calm and gentle voice goes, hey, I'm still here. Yeah. And people have been coming back, and they've been observing Jewish holidays and reigniting the observance of Yom Shabbat and not working and doing anything on Saturdays. It's like this hardcore rubber band snapped back, and people are actually doing it again. Which, as we learned,
I'm right there with it too.
Dude, it's awesome, and it's righteous, because they're not just saying, "Oh, I have to follow the law." What they're saying is, "I don't get this, and I'm going to start sacrificing my time and energy to God, and I'm going to practice what the ancient Israelites did as a requirement." They're taking these ancient requirements and smashing them into the modern world just to help them see what God meant by it and to try to find ways that Jesus has closed the gap between life and death and the Old Testament and the New Testament. And like, really, people are working super hard to try to figure out how these things come together. And I think that the fourth commandment is the most difficult one to reconcile between the Old and the New Testament. Let me read this to you real quick and get your thoughts.
Yeah, please.
So in Mark 12, Jesus is asked, what's the greatest commandment? These Pharisees, dude, thought they were so smart. And of course, Jesus tells them, the greatest commandments are love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as you love yourself.
Yeah.
Okay, so he doesn't get rid of any commandments. He combines them. He just combines them all into this tight package. They all... And we talked about this on our last podcast. If people weren't so obstinate and just slow in the head, he wouldn't have needed 10 commandments. I mean, if Adam and Eve wouldn't have, you know...
Absolutely.
...done their thing, we wouldn't have needed any commandments at all.
Just needed one, which was love the Lord.
Yeah, love the Lord your God. And even Jesus added on that second one, and your neighbor, okay? Because loving the Lord your God is your neighbor, because you're all made in the image of God. Don't forget this. You're made in the image of God. And this is, again, this is what we have to understand to map the Old and New Testament onto each other and understand what Jesus was talking about and see when Paul says you don't have to observe the Sabbath, he's not saying you don't have to trust and fear the Lord and there's no days to keep holy. Okay, check this out. So we get the greatest commandment. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and strength. And in John 12, verse 49 and 50, this is Jesus, and he speaks, and he says, "For I have not spoken on my own authority, but the Father who sent me gave me a command." Commandment? It's the same word. He gave me a command, what I should say, what I should speak. And I know that his command is everlasting life. Okay, this is what the command is.
Wow.
That the Father spoke to Jesus to tell us. The command is everlasting life. That's not, to us, that's not a command. If someone just walked up to you and said, "Everlasting life," you go, "Okay." But Jesus says says it's a command, which makes it a universal law. Everlasting life, dude. This is the new universal law. So when you think everlasting life, and you map it onto the greatest commandment, love the Lord your God and your neighbor ever and everlasting, dude, forever and ever, forever. And that doesn't mean just like a distant time into the future. It means now and forever. Everlasting love for God and your neighbor. So I'm thinking to myself, is now that the Holy Spirit has moved into my temple and the Lord is dwelling here on earth with us, even though it's not perfect Eden, it's a reminder of what we should be looking forward to. And if the rest on the Sabbath day is also a map and a telescope looking back at Eden to the rest that we would get in this perfect life with God, then if the command of everlasting life is the command that this is an everlasting Sabbath.
Yeah.
So Jesus says the kingdom is at hand, which would indicate within grasp. We know it's within our temple. We know it's in the Sabbath and in the rest. So it's like, maybe you don't have to not cook on the Sabbath, but you still must keep it holy. Which day do you keep holy? Dude, the everlasting day. Dude, the everlasting, ever-present seventh day. Which seems like a lot more tall of an order than just taking one day off, man.
So true.
Even though it's harder for me to imagine taking a day off at this point.
Yes. Especially with all the things on your plate. It's like, the last thing I need to do is take a break. Seemingly. And then you do it and you're like, oh, I needed a break.
Funny how that works.
Right? It is funny you say that, though, about the everlasting rest. Because this was something that I know, I think I mentioned it to you. I heard it recently and I was like, whoa, this is actually really interesting. When you look through the 7 days of creation, there's a pattern that gets created where after God creates something, he says, and then there is day and there is night, the first day, the second day, the third day. But what happens on the day that he rests? We don't see that pattern there. And so that could mean something, it could not mean something. But I think when there's a pattern that is established and then suddenly it's broken where we would expect it to be, I think that's kind of interesting. And I think that might mean something. And so, you know, what does it mean? Does that mean that God is resting? Does it mean that I'm done creating. Now it's for you guys to do your thing. It's like, what does that mean?
Oh. Yeah, that's very interesting. And I agree that the patterns must be witnessed and adhered to. The divine word of God is not just going to accidentally leave out and then there was night and it was the eighth day, right?
Yeah.
So you are definitely onto something here. And it's just, this is like one of the mind-blowing revelations that God is so far above us. Like the concept of time is just like, it's so hard for us to grasp. Oh my gosh, thousands of years in the future, like next week. Yeah. I mean, for God, a day is 1,000 years and 1,000 years is as if it's one day. So we always think about these things in frames of like, oh, it's been so long. Oh my gosh. Like he's been resting for thousands of years. But God is so far above us. And that's why these paradoxes work in the world. We don't get to see the whole picture. A lot of people have a problem with why doesn't the Bible just say such and such? Well, we don't get to see the whole picture. We just don't. It's not part of our privilege. And I don't know how much we'll get to know in the second birth.
Yeah.
But that's not for us to know.
Hmm.
I mean, God created a world and universe so perfect that on the seventh day, it just keeps going.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's to add to what you said there too. You know, that's something that we see throughout a major point in Job, everyone knows I love the book of Job. It's one of my favorite books of the Bible. And it's that idea of, yeah, you don't know. You don't have the whole story. You don't know the whole story. So who are we to just interject like we know the whole story and to question things like I have it all figured out when we don't? And that was even then adding on to what one of his major messages was to everyone, especially to like the Pharisees. And it's like, yeah, you think you have it figured out, but you missed the most important part, which is to love the Lord your God. It's like God cares more about your heart than he does about the things that you do. Now, the things you do are important, but what's your motivation? When we look at the woman that gave the two was it talents?
Yeah, all her money.
Jumping off. Yeah, she gave all of her money, but all of her money was such a small part of what everyone else gave. Everyone else is giving so much more than what she gave. But when you look at it from, well, what did they actually give? She gave everything. And these people gave some. But her heart was set on, this is what I need to do to worship and honor the Lord, and so I'm going to do that. And that sacrifice was so much more for her. And that's the important. What she did really was meaningless. Like, it doesn't really do anything to help, monetarily help the temple. No one's going to be like, oh, thank God she dumped those two coins in. That's going to save us. But for her, her faith was so great. Her love for the Lord was so great that was more honoring than people giving tens of thousands of dollars to actually monetarily help. But their sacrifice was not equal. Their love for the Lord, they weren't giving out of this love as much as she was. And so that's, I think, especially when we look at the commandments and obeying the Lord, it has more to do with, well, what are you doing? How much faith do you have that the Lord will sustain you, that he will give you that rest? What are you sacrificing for that? And it has less to do with what are the minor details of how are we obeying the commandments, the law? How are we observing the Sabbath? But are we?
Yeah, I mean, going back to what we kind of started on, Jesus he did not break any commandments, did not violate the law, even in the slightest. And yet we see at least seven examples of Jesus supposedly breaking the Shabbat. Well, he broke the tradition of Shabbat. He drives out an evil spirit in Mark 1:21. He heals Simon Peter's mother-in-law in Mark 1:29. He heals a man with a withered hand in Mark 3. He heals another man in Luke 14. And then he heals three more people in John, a blind man, a crippled woman, and the famous man by the pool of Bethesda when he gets up with his mat. And the Pharisees have had enough of this guy Jesus, and they're trying to find him. And they're like, hey, what do you think you're doing carrying your mat on Shabbat? And he says, the rabbi healed me and told me to pick up my mat and walk. So I did.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, this rabbi, who does he think he is telling people to walk on Shabbat and pick up their mat? And it's just like I said before, I'm not making fun of the people who observe the Sabbath. I think it's righteous and holy. But this story of the man at the pool of Bethesda just points out like how trite is it when you aren't doing it with trust and fear of the Lord.
Yeah.
It's got to be trust and fear of the Lord. I mean, that's the commandment. The fourth commandment is trust God. He will save you from death, even if you rest, especially when you rest. That's why accepting Christ into your heart is the requirement now. That's what he did. He defeated death, and now the requirement is trust in Christ to run your life. The trust. Dude, the fourth commandment is trust. To deliver you from death.
I love that. That's so good. it's amazing how from these commandments we can pull out something that is so foundational. I always look back to it, the Ten Commandments in particular. I always look at them like I did martial arts for a while, and just like that's the example I'm using because that's what I know. We'll take even music. You have scales. And it's one of the most basic things you can practice. It's one of the first things that you learn. It's like, oh, here's the C scale. And you're like, oh, cool. This is boring. I don't want to do this. And you're so excited to not have to practice those so you can play cool stuff. Because it's like, I'm trying to impress people. But in my experience, it's like what always happened was I'm trying to do more advanced things, but I'm so limited because I don't know my scales as well. Because then you start to identify, oh, the thing that I'm learning by playing this scale, I need to play this song. And then you start to start unpacking the scales and you realize, oh my gosh, these are actually really complicated, but they're also extremely basic. And I think that's one of the things we see with the commandments. It's like, yeah, on a face level, it's like, cool, got it, makes sense. But then you start to break into, you're like, these are extremely complicated, but at the same time, they're very simple and basic and foundational. And that's what makes them so incredible. Because we can look at this commandment that says, remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. And you're like, okay, cool. But what else does that mean? And just you said, it means have confidence, to have trust, to have faith in the Lord, that he will sustain you. Even when you're not doing what you should do, in quotes, to sustain yourself.
Yeah, it's really cool how we can just unpack these super dense words into these vast linked stories. And it's like, well, why couldn't God just make it easy to understand? And I think he did, because this is a being who lives outside the universe, who time doesn't affect, who created matter. This this is the easy stuff, bro. Like, we got to read a book.
And we have it easier than anyone in history.
Yeah.
We have thousands of years of really smart people that spent a lot of time on this.
Yeah, our resources right now are just spot on, man. I mean, now's the time. Now's the time. If you are not a Christian, dude, now's the time. You got a question? Absolutely. Oh, it can get answered. I guarantee you it can get answered. And that's one of the things over the last handful of years that is just blows me away. Every time I read something in the Bible that I'm like, dude, this seems inconsequential. Go and look it up. Like, whoa, oh, people have written like 800 books on this verse. Are you kidding me? It's incredible, dude.
It's absolutely amazing. So I do want to ask kind of a two-part question. One, do you observe to whatever extent a Sabbath? And if so, or if not, how has the study that you have done, how has that affected you moving forward?
No, I do not observe the Sabbath. And I'm thinking that maybe I should. And of course, at first, which at first being like just this week, is the first time in my life I thought to myself, maybe I should. For thinking about it, I mean, of course, the first thing I think is, well, that's impossible. Because who's going to take my kids to the zoo if I'm observing the Sabbath? And it's just like, it's such a, it's so typical of me and of people to just immediately be like, dude, no, that doesn't apply to me. It's too hard. It's not going to work. I have to think about it and pray about it and talk to my wife and my brother and my, and you, no doubt, all my brothers in Christ, and and really unpack what we should do. What should we do? I mean, I say, I pray every day at dinner with the family. I pray every night before I go to bed. Every spare moment that I think about it, I make sure to say a prayer of thanks or a prayer for help. And it's like, being in constant prayer is the closest I think I've come. And I just know that there's something else to do. There's definitely more to do. Do I have to do it? No. And maybe that's what is going to make it so so powerful for me. When I do figure out what is my Sabbath, it's a voluntary thing, because we know through the New Testament that it's not obligatory to take a day and stop working. Jesus worked. Jesus did works on the Sabbath. And Jesus is perfect. So I just need to keep trying to unpack the meaning of it and why it's important and what it means. What did Jesus do for us? And how do we reform this commandment and make sure that we observe it? It is, you know, it's our goal to be Christ-like. To be Christ-like, we must follow every law. So I'm feeling like there's more to this one that I've always ignored, I've always broken, or maybe I haven't been breaking it. I really don't know. I'm going to spend some time in prayer and discussion with my brothers and try to figure out what we do from here.
That's cool. And I'll say, I appreciate your honesty, first of all. I think that's a refreshing thing to hear. And I will say, hopefully it's encouraging, but even on our last episode when you brought this question up of like, well, what about the Sabbath day? That's what got me thinking about it and starting to do my own research and being like, oh, okay, how do I observe this for myself? Because Paul definitely gives a lot of freedom in what that looks like. And so I think there is a lot with the help of the Holy Spirit of like, what does observing the Sabbath look like for me? And how do I do that and honor the Lord well with that? And the other thing that I wanted to share, I actually read this. I've been reading through Ecclesiastes recently, and Ecclesiastes 6, starting in verse 1. I read this for this, well, a couple verses, and man, dude, it hit me first thing in the morning. It was like 5:30 in the morning. Hit me like a ton of bricks. But I thought it was so appropriate for our conversation today about the Sabbath. And I'll explain that after I read that, if it's not self-evident. So reading out of the ESV, "There is an evil that I have seen under the sun, and it lies heavy on mankind. A man to whom God gives wealth, possessions, and honor, so that he lacks nothing of all that he desires. Yet God does not give him power to enjoy them, but a stranger enjoys them. This is vanity. It is a grievous evil. If a man fathers 100 children and lives many years, so that the days of his years are many, but his soul is not satisfied with life's good things, and he also has no burial, I say that a stillborn child is better off than he. For it comes in vanity and goes in darkness, and in darkness its name is covered. Moreover, it has not seen the sun or known anything, yet it finds rest rather than he. Even though he should live 1,000 years twice over, yet enjoy no good, do not all go to that one place." And so it goes on from there. But for me, when I see that, it's like, that's why the Sabbath is so important. That's why it's important, because if we put all this work in, if we do the right things, and the Lord blesses us, which when we honor the Lord, when we do those things, there is blessing in those. But even with those, if we have all the possessions, all the wealth, we have hundreds of children, we live a long time, but we don't take the time to enjoy that, then it's better off that we were never born, is what the writer says in Ecclesiastes. And so for me, when I look at the Sabbath day, when I look at that day to rest, it's that day to enjoy what the Lord has blessed us with. And even when we look at the Israelites in the desert, in the wilderness, God blessed them with food and said, get a double portion and enjoy your rest. Enjoy the double portion on the next day when you don't have to gather. And the people that were like, yeah, I don't want to enjoy that good thing. I just want to keep on working. I want to do not what you said. I want to do the opposite of what you told me to do. They're going to be miserable. And so that's kind of where I land on that. It's like, I want to love the Lord, and I want to love what the Lord has blessed me with. And taking a day to step back from my occupation, my work, the things that I do on a normal day, is very refreshing. And so I'm not, everything that I work for, I don't leave it for a stranger to enjoy. I leave it for myself and my family to enjoy.
That's awesome. Yeah, Ecclesiastes at 5:30 in the morning is bound to just set the tone for the day. You know, it's really interesting that you bring this up. And isn't this always how the Lord works, dude? Because I have one more verse written down in my notes that I wasn't going to say anything about, but it's actually the perfect verse to follow up what you just wrote, man. What you just read.
Let's go.
This is Isaiah 58, 13 and 14. "If you keep your feet from breaking the Sabbath and from doing as you please on my holy day, if you call the Sabbath a delight and the Lord's holy day honorable, and if you honor it by not going your own way and by not doing as you please or speaking idle words, then you will find your joy in the Lord. And I will cause you to ride in triumph on the heights of the land and to feast on the inheritance of your father Jacob." Spoken. That's it, man.
That's so good, bro. That's so good. Drop that mic.
Yeah, dude, that's it. Ecclesiastes and Isaiah just, dude, they just closed it down.
Wow. That's cool. Dang. Dude, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'm so grateful that we had this conversation and I had an excuse to dig into the Sabbath. And I just hope this bears a lot of fruit for us and for your listeners and whoever runs into me in the next week and I just nail with facts about the Sabbath.
Like boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, you know it's all I'm gonna talk about for the next week or two. Just like, oh, by the way, did you observe the Sabbath by any chance? But okay, well, let me tell you a few things that I learned. My buddy Paul.
It's really good news.
Yeah, but as long as you're not doing anything, I've got some really good news.
Are you free for the next hour or so? Because my buddy Adam has a lot to say.
That's good stuff, man.
I love that. Do you have any closing thoughts for us? I know Isaiah was a good closer.
I mean, yeah, I just hope that we can spend some time in prayer and talk more about the Sabbath and just see how we can bring it to the modern day church and make sure that we're following this commandment. I know it's possible, and I know in my heart that I'm already doing it in some fashion. But I really need to ask the Lord to open that door for me. And hopefully he opens it for all of us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it is good to know that there is freedom in what it looks like and how it's done. But at the end of it, it's still important, I think, to be in prayer about that and seek the Holy Spirit and how that's done for us individually.
Definitely.
Yeah, so that's good.
Thanks, bro.
Well, we have 8 more commandments.
Yeah, which one's next? In our series of Why Are Simple Words So Hard to Understand?
Absolutely. Dude, I am game.
All right, man, we'll see what comes next.
I love it. Thank you so much, and thank you guys for listening, for watching, however you're tuning in. Appreciate you, love you, and I will talk to you hopefully sooner rather than later.